Well, thank you, Tyson. I do appreciate the invitation to come here today. When he told me he wanted me to cover the physiology of cotton following cover crops, I got a little nervous, though, thinking, how can I fill 30 minutes with that? Almost the entire research literature on cover crops has been done by soil scientists and agronomists, and rightly so. Cover crops are old. There's an old practice. There's a 1938 chapter in the 1938 USDA Handbook of Agriculture on using cover crops and green manures for crop production. Probably rightly so, that one was written by an author in the Southeast because the Southeast has had lots of soil productivity problems, either on the coastal plain or in the Piedmont regions. But anyway, I'll try to fill 30 minutes for you. And what I'm going to talk about today, basically I'll have a few slides on water, a few slides on light, touch on allelopathy, talk about nutrients, and then end up with some data on yields and productivity following cover crops. And I just hit up or down. There we go. But before I get into that part of the talk, let me talk about our conditions in the Southeast, in Florence, and why cover crops have worked there for so long. And part of it is our precipitation and our ET. This is some data from our weather station at Florence. And as you can see, when we plant cover crops, September, October, November, ET and rainfall are pretty much equal. And so we can get them established, we can plant them, they can get growing, they can get some biomass before the winter months, and they have all the way through March where ET is below rainfall. Starting in April though, April and May are our driest months, and so those 2 months, great for planting. Farmers can get out and get their crops planted, corn, beans, and cotton. And then we get starting to get more summer rains later, but we are behind due to those early months. And this is a picture of our soils. And our soils, the coastal plain soils. These soils have a low water capacity A horizon. That's sand, sandy loam, or loamy sand. And that is laid over a root restricting E horizon. Can't find the mouse. Root restricting E horizon. That's basically the same texture as the surface layer, but all the organic matter has leached out. And so that layer packs really, really hard. It's bent a lot of penetrometer probes over the years. Over that is a sandy clay loam B horizon, which does have a little structure. So if roots can get down into that sandy clay loam B horizon, they can spread out in the profile and gather more water, and it has more water holding capacity. These soils hold about an inch per foot. So cotton, corn, those fully grown crops, they'll hold about three days of water. Okay, so to manage these soils, even in our conservation tillage system, we have to do some type of tillage to either break up that horizon or break up the compaction. And this is a very typical unit that's put in front of most planters. This is a KMC subsoiler unit. These shanks are pulled through the soil. They go down about a foot into the soil, loosening the soil, and they're usually aligned right in front of the planter units so they can pull it through. There's other deep tillage systems. There's the Terramax, the Paratail, that people have used, and those work fine too. But most growers are still using this kind of system. Over on the right, this is some data from Warren Buescher showing the subsoil disruption pattern using that KMC subsoiler in our soils. These asterisks right here, those are the row positions. And then the red bar is the soil strength at 1 megapascal. The white line is 2 megapascals, and the green is 3 megapascals. And you can see this disruption pattern that occurs with those shanks. We're mostly concerned about that white bar, that white line, 2 megapascals, what's generally considered root restricting. So with that, I'll get into a little bit about water, and I don't need to show this group any more data on what happens when cotton doesn't have enough water. We see that all the time. So I'll just cut those comments short and just say basically, cover crops for conservation tillage systems. They do increase rainfall infiltration. They do reduce soil water evaporation, as Robert showed. And there's some evidence that they increase soil organic matter, but this takes a long time, even with high residue cover crops. But of course, if you can increase soil organic matter, you build soil water holding capacity. The other thing we got to think about with cover crops is that these crops deplete soil water. And as you remember the ET rainfall graph, it's coming at a time when we're becoming low in rainfall. When I first started in Florence, they actually didn't recommend growing cover crops in our region simply because they dried out the soil. Several researchers who were starting using conservation tillage in the 70s, they were trying to incorporate cover crops, and they found that they pulled too much water out of the soil. And we see that almost every year in our wheat-soybean double crop system, where the wheat pulls out all the soil water. The farmers will dust in the seeds and hope for a rain. Some years it works. Some years you get a quarter inch rain, the seeds germinate, the seeds die. And I've seen that happen twice in my fields. So I don't dust them in anymore. Cost of seed and cost of diesel fuel have gone up too much. But that was a common practice back in the early 80s when I first got there. One more thing about water, maybe unique to our region, this is some data that Warren Buescher collected in some of my plots. Soil strength is correlated with soil water content. As you can see on the left, in one of our cotton experiments, we found a nice relationship, and this is the whole profile, so the whole curve thing. Nice relationship between water content and cone index. So the drier it is in the spring, probably the less root exploration you're going to have. And then at the end of the season, we related cone index to root counts. And this is what we found, pretty good relationship between soil strength at planting and then root count in early September. Okay. A little bit about light quality. When I first got to Florence, a plant physiologist named Mike Kasperbauer was there, and he was working on how to manipulate the light environments around the plants to change productivity and increase productivity. Obviously, if you're growing cotton in wheat stubble or rye stubble like this, you're changing the light quality that is impinging on the plants and affecting the phytochrome system within the plants. And here's some of Mike's data from a greenhouse study where he looked at cotton grown over soil, which had a far red to red ratio of 1.1, weathered straw, which had a far red to red ratio of 1.31, and over fresh straw, And he did this two different years, right after the wheat was harvested every year, you bring the wheat in. And as you can see in the graph on top, the root to shoot ratio changed pretty dramatically, especially in year one, or in year two rather, in the second year of his study, as you change the red to far red ratio of the light that was impinging from the soil surface. I looked for this in the field a little bit, and basically what I did find in these conservation tillage systems, that in one of my studies, cotton grown over no-till rye, and no-till with subsoiling, of course, or over just old cotton stubble, we did find taller plants growing in the rye plots than in the over the cotton stubble. And it may affect fruiting a little bit. This is some data out of Mississippi where they compared no-till vetch to no-till wheat, just to no-till over cotton stubble, to conventional tillage. And basically, what they found there was that the percent of total fruiting on the lower nodes was less where they had, especially no-till wheat, but also a little bit no-till vetch, than when over straight no-till. Basically, they had lower both counts in the lower nodes of the plants. So the light environment on growth is important. But Mike also did a pretty interesting study, and to be honest with you, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but where he looked at the far red to red ratio from the soil surface and how it affected carpal wall thickness. And this graph at the bottom, or this graph on down here, is the transmission through the carpal wall of light when plants were grown over a green mulch or plants were grown over a white mulch. And you can see the big change in the amount of light that went through that carpal wall between white and green. Now, if you think about what's going on here, shaded leaves will get a higher far red to red ratio than a sun leaf. Shaded leaves are thinner and usually a little wider, but mainly thinner. And what he found was that same thing was happening to the carpal walls around the bowls. And then when he checked the fiber length here in the lower right, he found higher fiber length for the plants grown over the mulches that had a higher far red to red ratio than the aluminum or the white mulches that had a lower far red to red ratio. Kind of interesting stuff. This is kind of difficult to do in the field, especially when we're dealing with conservation tillage and everything else going on out there, but something to keep in mind as we're developing these systems. Oh, I also looked for this in the field. I looked for this in the field in one of my studies a little bit, where I looked at the fiber length, the first position bowls at nodes 6 and 7 in 1990. In all 3 years, there was very little difference between cotton grown over no-till, old cotton stubble, or over a rye mulch. But if you can see in the second 2 years of the study, there was a little bit of difference, a little bit higher fiber length in those bowls grown over the no-till rye. Allelopathy, that is a fun one. We all know that plants, when they decompose, are giving off chemicals that will inhibit other plants. This has been studied a lot. Sometimes I think allelopathy is thrown into the all other category, or the all other category, when people can't explain the results, they throw it into allelopathy. And when you're using cover crops as green manures, it's been a long time known, for cotton in particular, that you have to wait. If you work in that cover crop, you have to let the stuff decompose and let those chemicals dissipate in the soil before you plant cotton, or you're going to get those little cotton roots as they emerge. The radicals will be, the root tips will be really hurt. But this is some data from one of my studies where we took some residues from the field, the green plants from the field, stuck them in pots, just to illustrate this. And you can see, and planted cotton 1 week later, and you can see that black oat and rye, the two cereals, inhibited germination and emergence a little bit, root rate, root length a little bit, but the crimson clover, which has that much more nitrogen, more ammonia coming off, would really knock them down. There hasn't been too much in the literature lately about it, but I did find this one paper from the High Plains where they planted cotton in the plots where they had harvested wheat and rye. Basically they found that yields were lower when the cotton was grown following wheat and rye cover crop compared to a no cover. And you can see the mean yields for the 3 years of this study down here. What they reported in that paper was the lower yield in cover crops. And the cover crop plots was associated with higher amounts of allelopathic decomposition products that they said were suspected were coming from the roots, this Gimboa boa, Diaboa, in the soil. Now, Kip Balcom and I, Kip's in Auburn, we did a study where we harvested the cover crops in a biomass for bioenergy study. And basically, we didn't have a untreated control in that study, but we didn't find any differences in yield amongst these three winter legumes and these three cereals. Okay, nutrients. Nitrogen's been studied a lot. There's probably not a state out there that doesn't have a nitrogen response curve to especially legumes. I'll put this data in here from John Bouquet, very classic results, showing with a rye cover crop for nitrogen, you get a nice nitrogen response curve to wheat. Here's the immobilization compared to if it's worked in the soil, allowed to decompose a little faster. But if you use a legume cover crop, basically no response to nitrogen. And this is shown over and over again. We probably all have some data like this that have worked on cover crops. So nitrogen is pretty well known. What I want to do now for a couple slides is share some results that we just collected these last 2 years on some plots that we've had in Florence since that have been managed with no-till or with conventional till since 1978. Looking at, and what we did in this study and this year, we actually split the plots. We planted crimson clover on half the plots, and on the other half, we just had left it winter fallow. This was in rotation with corn. And the idea behind this study is, cover crops are supposed to improve soil health, improve enzymes on the nutrients and improve nutrient availability. Do they affect nutrient uptake of the cotton crop? So this is a picture of the soils. The one on the left is fallow. It's been no-till since 1978, so it does have a little organic matter in there. And the one on the right is from the top 4 inches of following crimson clover. And just the root decomposition and maybe the microbes too from that were growing under the cover crops, they appeared to change the soil a little bit. I know the technician who grabbed these soils for the microbiologist that's working with me on this project, she loved grabbing the cotton roots out of the plots that had clover in, and it was much easier to pull them out and get them out compared to the no-till with that didn't have a cover crop growing. This is the nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium data and the biomass from when we harvested plants at 19, 33, and 49 days after planting. We didn't see any difference in biomass, as you can see. No difference in nitrogen, but we did no significant differences. We did put nitrogen to the fallow plots in this study. The phosphorus and potassium, or the phosphorus levels were a little higher at the first two sampling times, and potassium was a little higher with clover at the first sampling time in 2015. 2016, we took the same data. Again, we found a little bit differences in biomass in that year, but they flipped between sampling times, so that might be just sampling error. But we found absolutely no difference in the second year of the study looking at these three nutrients. We also looked at calcium, magnesium, zinc, copper, and manganese, and iron in the cotton plants. Now what this graph is if you see, if there's a C in it, that means the clover cover crop had higher content of that nutrient. If there's an F, the fallow plants did, the cotton plants did. If there's a line, it means no difference. But in the first year of this study, we thought we might have a little something going on with calcium and magnesium. Since at all three sampling times for calcium, we did see higher calcium levels. But in the second year, you can see the fallow actually was a little higher at the first sampling time, and then no differences. So in this study, we found very little differences. Maybe that's not to be unexpected, since we're managing these plots for the conservation tillage versus conventional tillage comparison, so we make sure there's plenty of nutrients in both treatments. Just a little bit, I don't know how I'm doing on time, but 5 minutes. A little bit about productivity. This is what we're hoping farmers, I thought that would turn out better. We're thinking about farmers are going to, planting into these high residue situations. This is some of my early data from the early 90s, where we compared conventional and conservation tillage with three cover crops and a fallow treatment. And basically what we found in that was, if you wanted to get conservation tillage yields up to the conventional tillage yields, you put in a rye cover crop. The legumes in this study were slightly lower, especially in conservation tillage systems. Harry Schomburg followed that up with a study subsequent to that in the coastal plain of Georgia, and he basically found a very similar result, that black oat here and rye were his top two cover crops for yield. This again is a conservation tillage system, and that was and even the oilseed radish wasn't too bad, a little bit higher than the legumes. Okay, and in that long-term tillage study, the data I just showed you, these are the yields we got in 2015. I didn't get it out before the hurricane came through in the first week in October, and that's why those Yields are so low, that's after about 20 inches of rain fell on it. In 2016, I did get it out before the hurricane came. Very lucky. And I must be getting a little bit better because the clover yields have moved up from that 1996 study. But you can see just slightly less than fallow in our conservation tillage system. So, some concluding remarks. I'm not going to sum this up, but cover crops in the southeast have been considered tools to control soil erosion and increase soil organic matter for a very long time. And I don't think we need to lose focus on that, and that's for long-term sustainability of for future generations. I think we need to continue that. Some random thoughts I had. First of all, I think remote sensing and site-specific N application will greatly improve nitrogen management following cover crops, in particular following legumes. As nitrogen prices go up, and they will go up since natural gas prices start going up, we'll be more reliant on legumes. And since growing a legume provides variability in nitrogen rate across the field because of the legumes don't grow uniformly across the field, this will be a real needed boost for their management. And finally, for the physiologists out there, I think if we're going to help the NRCS program of improving soils by using cover crops, breeders don't have time to do a whole lot of screening over cover crop systems. But we can start to develop data sets that will help them identify genotypes, or at least traits, that will be superior in cover crop systems. With that, I bet I used my whole half hour.
We have time for one question.
Kevin.
Phil, do you have any data on carbon, soil carbon, and nitrogen in the long term?
Yeah, we do. The carbon's about double in the no-till in the top 4 inches. Nitrogen's up high, a little bit higher too. I don't think it's quite double though. And it took a long time. It took 10 years just with no-till corn and corn, wheat, soybean to get it up to differences that we could measure.
So.
I think Paul's going to show some data on organic matter, right?
Yeah.